All right, welcome in to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Sherry, how you doing?
I'm good today. Hey, Jason.
Good. Phil, what are we on? Episode 43? 42? Man, I keep getting that wrong. Fun episode today. Back by popular demand is the topic of food. So we have Frisch's Vice President today with us, Todd Napier, to talk about some exciting things going on at Frisch's. Such an iconic, popular hometown brand, much like we had Grater's ice cream CEO, Rich Grater, a few weeks ago. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to that. It was a great interview. Not because I did it. I just thought Rich was great. And so we're going to stick with that. It's summertime, a little bit of downtime right now within politics, with the exception of some things going on at the State House. And with that, we're going to bring in our coworker, our teammate, our State House reporter, Jesse Ballmer. Jesse, how you doing?
Hey, doing all right. Thanks for having me on.
Fresh off a cruise to somewhere out in the sea.
Yeah. So I brought back a tan, and then Ohio rained for like 7 days straight. So that was nice. A good welcome home.
And you brought back your life as well, because one of your stops was the Dominican Republic. So we're glad to have you. I think you came back from that place, Dominican Republic, where is under fire right now for
a lot of tourist deaths.
So
We had a good time. We had a safe time, but we avoided the all-inclusive resorts. So,
I actually have a question. How come you went on vacation like not after the budget? Because I know from past experience with the city, like when council goes on break, I'm like, woo, I need to go on break. But you kind of went just a little bit before you came back, and it's like you had to hit the ground running with all this stuff that's going on with the budget.
Yeah, it was a bit of poor timing. I had three friends who were celebrating their 30th birthday, and so I was tagging along, celebrating the second anniversary of my 30th birthday, and that was the week that worked out for all of them. But
all right, I guess they're your friend's birthday trumped the budget,
which is always the marathon of the state budget time.
And you know what, Jesse? It's all still there when you got back, and here you are coming down the stretch of the upcoming fiscal year budget, which is the deadline's what? June, coming up here, June 30th, correct?
Yes. And so Ohio lawmakers have until June 30th to pass the two-year state budget, which is close to $70 billion now. And if they don't, then they have to do a continuing resolution, and it just gets very complicated. So hopefully they'll get it done by Sunday.
How close are you to locking them all in a room and making them getting it done? Pretty close there?
Everyone I've talked to, I've pitched that we could get this done by Friday and all just have a nice weekend, get our cookouts on before the 4th of July holiday. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be a weekend activity as well.
You know what? Let's dive in, because honestly, you gave us a list of about 50 things that are going on, and I think we're going to hit about five or six of them.
I'll tell you what, Jesse, the one thing that's been just that, I mean, the citizenry of Ohio have been bombarded by, in radio ads, television ads, this budget season has been House Bill 6. What's your easy explainer of House Bill 6, since we're hearing so much about that? Call your state rep, call your state senator. How would you sum up House Bill 6?
Yeah, so it's essentially an energy overhaul, and what it would do would be charge everyone in Ohio's utilities bills a $1 fee for the residential person, or it's higher for if you own a business or a big business, and that money would go towards nuclear energy. There are two power plants in northern Ohio that the company that operates them is under bankruptcy, in part because of some poor business decisions, and in part just because natural gas has really taken off in Ohio. So they want the state to give them some money to help them out. The bill also gets rid of renewable energy standards. So this kind of ability for your electric companies to invest in wind and solar and then, you know, charge a fee to that to your utility bill. It also gets rid of energy efficiency standards. So things that make your home or your business more energy efficient, those were subsidized, and this would get rid of that.
So if HB 6 passes, it's already passed the House, correct?
Yeah, passed the House. So it's sitting in the Senate. And this is a bill that Larry Householder, the Speaker of the Ohio House, has really pushed hard for.
Yep.
It's something that he sees as a priority. It's also something that he's received a lot of campaign donations for. First Energy Solutions, which owns the power plants, and then the parent company, First Energy, has spent a lot of money on lobbying, a lot of money directly and indirectly on advertisements. And so this is something they're pushing very hard for in Ohio. They also pushed for it in Pennsylvania and was unsuccessful there. So it's gone through the House, and now it's sitting in the Senate. And it's kind of up in the air whether the Senate is going to move this before they go on break June 30th, whether they would come back.
Can they pass the budget without this in it and then just do this alone after?
Yeah, so this isn't in the budget, so they need to address the budget by the 30th. This is not something that they need to address, this energy overhaul, but it's something First Energy would very much like them to address because they're in a bankruptcy proceedings and feel like they need this money sooner rather than later.
And currently, First Energy Solutions, which runs the two nuclear power plants in Northern Ohio, they receive around $198 million a year in public subsidies. Is that correct?
They basically, they do receive subsidies. Also, about a decade or so ago, First Energy and all of the other companies, so Duke in Cincinnati, American Electric Power in the Central Ohio area, and Datum Power and Light, they receive subsidies from the state to move towards a more competitive market. And First Energy has received by and large the most. It was something like $10.2 billion compared to Duke got $1.2 billion and AEP got $1.8 billion. So they've already received a lot of help from the state, which is the argument from those who don't like this bill. Argument in favor of bailing out First Energy and the nuclear plants is there are a lot of jobs there. And a lot of specialized jobs, some people who maybe got out of the military with this kind of training on nuclear energy and then went to work in Northern Ohio.
1,300 jobs, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I want to make sure. So if House Bill 6, which has already passed the House, and if it passes the Senate, the ratepayers will have a $1 fee, and this is residents. I'm just trying to figure out what it means for me and you and the regular everyday, electric bill ratepayer. That means you will pay an extra dollar a month on your electric bill, correct?
On your electric bill, yeah.
So it's not saving us money, right?
Well, that's where there's some debate. So right now you're already being charged on your bill for things like renewable energy and energy efficiency. And so if you got rid of those, you wouldn't be seeing that on your bill anymore, and you would just have this new fee on your bill. Proponents of energy efficiency and renewable energy say that saves you money. They can point to studies where that saves you money to have a more energy efficient house. And so they say you would lose money because you'd be less efficient and so forth. So there's a lot of debate about whether this saves you money or costs you money, but it could be a few dollars a month either way.
The spin doctors are working overtime on this one, certainly.
Yeah, and it's hard because some of the riders are adjusted every quarter, so it might save you money one quarter and cost you money the next. Energy policy is super fun like that.
Let's shift away from that. Let's talk about what do we want to talk about? We had such a long list here. Let's talk about fireworks. You wrote about this today on Cincinnati.com. Today being Tuesday as we record, you'll be listening to this, folks, on Wednesday. what's this new fireworks bill that or fireworks law that's coming down the pike?
Yeah, so this is something that they're looking at doing, and Ohio lawmakers have tried multiple times to lift this ban on fireworks. As I'm sure you know, down in Cincinnati, you can shoot off fireworks in Kentucky and Indiana with some restrictions, but Ohio has this rule that you can purchase fireworks in the state, but then you have to take them out of the state within 48 hours, which is something people tend to ignore, but can actually lead to a first-degree misdemeanor and a fine. So the effort is to try to eliminate that starting January 1st, 2020.
Why is it so hard to get this passed? This is literally, I've been a reporter, let's not say how many years, but like pretty much every year that I've ever been a reporter, the newest person at the newspaper has to write the story explaining how this all works. Like it seems very simple to fix.
Yeah, it's one of those things that there ends up being a lot of opposition to at the state house. You know, people like Prevent Blindness Ohio or the State Medical Association or the American Academy of Pediatrics say, you know, fireworks are not safe and they can cause fires and all of these problems. And that can be a convincing argument for lawmakers in Columbus. And so they really haven't been able to get over the hump of legalizing it.
Or, well, if you live here in Cincinnati, as you know, Indiana's, you know, I think you can run there. Right over the border, there's all the tents are set up and the big fireworks barns.
I'm not a huge fireworks fan, but so I won't inject my editorial opinion. Oh, yeah, I will. This is silly. We should be allowed to own fireworks and set them off, and certainly not just a free-for-all, but having restrictions is good, but making them illegal is just kind of crazy.
Is the kind of telling people, like, wink, wink, you can buy them here, but you must take them out of state. That's the oddest part of Ohio's law right now.
All those poor people in Columbus, what do? There's no fireworks there?
The lawmakers have to have something to do, I guess. Let's get off fireworks, but let's shift to another thing that's in the state budget that's sort of tucked way down in there, is that our primary election is going to move to March 17th. Now, it was originally in May, then it got moved back to, the first Tuesday of March. Now we're now trying to move it now 2 weeks back to March 17th. What the hell's going on, Jesse?
So this was an addition in the Senate, and we'll see if it actually sticks it out into the final version. But basically, they want to move it back a week. To the March 17th, as you mentioned. And the goal of that is if it's after the second week in March, then Ohio becomes a winner-take-all state for the Republicans, which means if President Donald Trump wins Ohio on the GOP ticket, which there aren't a lot of competitors on that side right now in the primary, he would get all of Ohio's electoral votes for the Republican side. And some Democrats on social media were like, well, what's the point of that? Are they really that concerned about Bill Weld? But it's the Ohio, the legislature is controlled by Republicans, so they can move it up and back if they want to.
And the state party is controlled by Trump. So you put those two things together, and this is something that could happen.
Mm-hmm. So that's one change that we could anticipate, but I mean, it's 1 week later. I don't think it's going to tear the entire system down.
Gotcha. So there's not a lot of drama around that, is what you're saying.
I think there's a point of like frustration from folks who don't want to have to send out different filers, and it means like potentially deadlines are changing on when you would file to run for certain races and so forth.
Okay.
But I think it was safe to say that President Trump was going to get most of the Republican votes before this, and I don't think that would change with this change.
Has anyone taken into consideration, like, do you drink green beer and then go vote, or do you do that after? Like, has anyone really thought this through? Because it seems like, I don't know, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, you. I mean, if you're taking the day off anyway, might as well do your civic duty and then head to the bars.
Next item on our list is gerrymandering. We Supreme Court case. We're potentially expecting some rulings coming up today. As you're listening to this, folks, here on Wednesday. What are we expecting there, Jesse?
So there are like 50 different ways this can go. The range is kind of the worst case scenario for people who don't like the current congressional map is if the U.S. Supreme Court says, hey, this is not something that the court should be weighing in on. If that's the case, if they say that to North Carolina and Maryland, it's fair to say they would say that to Ohio as well.
Yep.
The best case scenario for people who don't like the maps would be for the Supreme Court to say, yeah, there's a bunch of gerrymandering here. Like, these lines are drawn really poorly, and here are the things that you need to be looking for in a good map. Ohio has, the people who brought the lawsuits in Ohio worked very hard to do, like, I don't know, almost a dozen tests on this. And so they think they're covering their bases by looking at it a bunch of different ways.
And in a federal court here, the federal court here in Cincinnati, a judge panel ruled that the lines do need to be redrawn for the 2020 election to create fairer districts. And that the general thought is that that will favor or at least give the Democrats a better shot. The Republicans successfully got a stay on that ruling. And so now we're waiting to see how these other cases in other states, Maryland, North Carolina in particular. And what's interesting is that Maryland, they're drawn right now to favor the Democrats. And in North Carolina, they're drawn to favor the Republicans. So this is ultimately, you know, I think most Democrats here in Ohio are generally think that because it's a conservative leaning Supreme Court, that this is not going to turn out in their favor for 2020. Are you getting a read on any of this, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly a scenario that could happen. I also think this could drag out to the fall if it's something more ambiguous or if it's pretty narrow to those two states, then Ohio might have to argue this for months to come. And that really just creates a little more uncertainty going into the 2020 race because people are looking at the map, seeing if they can win, seeing if they have the money to do it. And I mean, it helps to know what the district's going to look like to make that decision.
And here in Ohio, really ground zero for, I think that's, was that one of your terms maybe, you know, ground zero for this issue is Ohio's first congressional district, which covers your greater Cincinnati, Western and Northern Hamilton County, all of Warren County, currently held, long time held by Republican Steve Chabot. And what's interesting right now, Jesse, is there's a lot of, Democrats who are in a holding pattern because if this ruling does go through and the Supreme Court or the courts rule ultimately that they do have to redraw the lines for 2020, you don't split up the city of Cincinnati. Most of Hamilton County then becomes its own district, or this is sort of the general thought anyway. And the way things have trended in this county, it becomes more in favor of Democrats. So the more intrigue there is that you have all these Democrats, Alicia Reese, Jill Schiller, Aftab Pureval, I've heard some other names who are kind of in a holding pattern because, the big fight, if it does get redrawn, is going to be the Democratic primary for that race next year. And whoever wins that primary really is going to be the odds on favorite. And I wouldn't be surprised if Steve Chabot retires or it becomes, like I said, it becomes a really entirely different look in that district. I don't even know what I'm trying to say here.
You almost have to tip your hat to the people who drew the lines on the first and second congressional districts because it is very hard to get what is becoming a more Democratic city in Cincinnati to be completely encapsulated by two Republican congressional districts. Yeah. And I think both what the court is saying and what political observers are saying is you couldn't do that again if you had to draw this a little more fairly. So that would create a Democratic leaning district in Cincinnati, which it has not had. And that would certainly change politics and people's political futures in that area.
So I feel like, Jesse, because people are like, well, we'll need time to redraw the lines if that's what the decision is. But I feel like if it comes down that they need to be redrawn right now, that like people are just going to pull them out of their desk drawers. They've been sitting on them, like ones who, you know, want them to be redrawn. Aren't these just all sitting around ready to go? Or do you really think we're starting from scratch here once we get a decision?
Well, so the way that the court said the state lawmakers would get the first crack at this, and I think they don't have a desk drawer map. I think they were focused on the budget. They were focused on this energy overhaul. They were hoping that they would get this stay in the U.S. Supreme Court so they didn't have to deal with this right now. So I think it would take a little bit of time for them to pull it together, but they pulled it together pretty quickly in the past, so it would not be horrible. If they can't come up with a map that makes that panel of judges down in Cincinnati happy, then the panel may pick one. And I think it's likely that they'll pick one that was submitted by the people who brought the lawsuit. So you can look at that map. It's on one of my stories.
Forces you to draw the fair lines. It's like when you're giving a child a sandwich and you cut it in half, you have to cut them even. Like, and so everybody picks, and it's like, otherwise someone else is going to get to do it.
And let's, you know, cut to the chase on the politics of this is right now the Republicans are just trying to run out the clock because the legislature has already decided that the lines will be redrawn in 2022. They're just trying to run out the clock on the Republicans are in the state of Ohio, which obviously the Republicans control. And could have more drama or this may be really completely over by the end of Wednesday.
Yeah, I think you'll have a much better idea by next week what things are going to look like in 2020 in Ohio. So,
all right, can we talk about what's going on with the Film Commission? Because this city is basically like Hollywood, like the annex. Like the stars, they come to town. You go out to the restaurants and you see them, and you're on the street, you bump into them. Like filming movies has become a very big thing here in Cincinnati. But it's in jeopardy, yes.
Yeah, so basically in the state budget, there is a fight between the House and the Senate as to whether we should keep this motion picture film tax credit, which is basically you get a tax break for creating movies or bringing movies and filming them in Ohio. And both Cincinnati and Cleveland have been the biggest benefactors of this. Cleveland has received more money for things like Captain America, Winter Soldier, but obviously there's been a number of movies in the Cincinnati area that, you know, you get to see your town on the movie.
Yeah, I feel like the Roebling Bridge should be in every movie.
Yeah, so the House wanted to get rid of this. The idea was kind of, these are a bunch of tax breaks that we don't know how much they're benefiting the average Ohioan. The Senate said, no, these are great. They bring industry to Ohio. They actually want to expand it to people who maybe bring like an out-of-town Broadway show to Ohio or like do their trial in Ohio before taking it to New York. So that is one of the things that they're going to have to figure out before this heads to DeWine on Sunday.
It's a really interesting position on both sides when you think about the entire legislature dominated by Republicans, and this is helping Hollywood and how the House stands on one side of it and the Senate completely sees it a different way.
Yeah, they're kind of two different arguments that you could make as a conservative, like, hey, we should not be giving out all these tax breaks to, you know, Hollywood folks, mm-hmm. or, hey, this is a income generator for the average Ohioan. So, I mean, they're both things that you could hear Republicans saying, and it's just which side of the debate you're going to be on.
Jesse, you're all over this stuff. You and Jackie Borchert, our Capitol Bureau Chief. As we head down the stretch here of the state budget, two-year state budget, When people want to learn more about what you're covering and what Jackie are covering, can you tell us where we can find you on Twitter?
Yeah, so I am at J Balmert, B as in boy, A-L-M-E-R-T. And Jackie is at J-M Borchardt, B-O-R-C-H-A-R-D-T. So find us on Twitter and social media.
So at J Balmert and at J-M Borchardt. You guys are doing fantastic work. Just one more plug, folks, for getting that Cincinnati.com subscription. We have two full-time, top-notch reporters covering the State House. So, Jesse, thanks so much for this is our first time to have you on in 2019. You were on back at election season in last fall. So thanks. Your insight is always welcome and valued. So thanks so much, Jesse.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, interview time here on the TSC. Sticking with our summer flavor season. You love food. Our listeners love food. And so we're giving the listeners what they want. Welcome in Todd Napier, Vice President of Frisch's. Todd, good to have you here.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Thanks for doing this. This is we had Rich Grader from Grader's a couple weeks ago. So we covered ice cream, and let's cover big boys today and fries and all the fun things that you guys have to eat.
So you know what this pretty much means, right? We're going to have to set the graters aside in the freezer, and we're going to have hot fudge cake tonight for dessert.
I could have brought some swag.
Did you bring some in for us?
I'll be better prepared.
Our guests don't need to bring us food. We have
our
plenty
boss,
of it.
Our boss, our politics editor, Carl Weiser, was really hoping for that, but it's not to be today. A lot of great things going on with Frisch's right now. You guys have been redoing your stores. You got the downtown store now. Let's start with that. It's so highly visible. How is the downtown store doing? And is it are things going the way that you guys had hoped for?
Yeah. So great question. I don't think we really knew what to expect. We were excited about coming back and having a downtown presence, but you know the customer base there is. Different than what you have out in the burbs with the residential community. So you're serving a lot of folks who are on the go, 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 fast, fast, fast. We love that we have the proximity to Fountain Square, obviously, and getting to be kind of part of the fabric of downtown. And we found that our guests there like the same kinds of stuff that our guests like in all of our other locations. So we've been back for about a year, and we're thrilled to be back downtown.
Do you feel like it's filled a void? I mean, And I know it's not a fast food restaurant per se, but I think in the case of the downtown store, you almost would kind of see it as a fast food burger, fries, lunchtime.
That's overwhelmingly burgers, yeah. Fries, and sandwiches. About 2/3 of our business is in that lunch day part for exactly that reason.
Do you feel like you guys have filled a void with, I mean, really there are no fat, I mean, Wendy's left a few years ago and there was no more McDonald's. It used to be in the Tower Place Mall. Do you feel like you filled a void that downtown needed? And I know it seems so simple, but do you feel like that?
We do. There were really kind of two questions that I've been enrolled for almost 2 years. The two questions that I've been asked most frequently were, when are you coming back downtown? And when are you going to bring back Coca-Cola? And so we did both of those last year.
With the Coke, Pepsi, that's going to need its own setup. Yeah, it's a very absolutely. Important conversation. I mean, I will say with Frisch's, you know, with Jack, my 11-year-old, you know, mommy wants to go to Sacred Beast and I want to go, you know, to all these fancy restaurants and over the Rhine. But then he's like, no, like he wants to go to Frisch's. And yep. So you can be downtown and do the downtown things like Fountain Square, but like it's so kid friendly.
Yep. And we have kind of nice something thing. For everybody, right? Our goal is to survive the veto vote. If you want salad, we've got salad. You want a burger, we've got a burger. You want a sandwich, we've got you covered.
So, you know, the Coke Pepsi thing a year ago, right?
Crazy.
A little bit more maybe.
Yep.
There it is. That like here's the announcement, it's coming. Thirsty. It's like
right. We leave you thirsting for more. Well, not a vanilla announcement, I think, is the way they. And I grew up on the west side of Cincinnati, so I knew, for those of us who grew up with the brand and in this market understood the gravity, nobody else did. Even our new business partners at Coca-Cola who are not based here were like, well, yeah, we think it's exciting, but they didn't realize it was going to be, you know, what it was.
You know, what did you find? I mean, it had been in the conversation for a while. People were they wanted it. Like, yep. What made you decide to finally do it?
So I think there had been interest all along. So you all know that the company was sold to an equity firm in Atlanta 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And right away when our new CEO, Jason Vaughn, came in role, he said, listen, I want to listen to the guest. I want to do right by the guest. I want to do right by the brand. So all along he was looking for what's the path forward to get back to Coca-Cola. And he's ultimately, it was his leadership that really rolled that rock up the hill for a good long time to make it all come together last year.
Was it the kind of thing where you were like getting emails and people would call the company, or is it just like you just tell your waitress, wanted Coke?
All of the above, right? So it was anytime I'm wearing Frisch's Big Boy logos out in the community, people would say, oh, you work there? And I always knew what was coming next when you bring it back Coke. It was the number one most requested item. No matter what we posted on our social platforms, people would say, that's really awesome. But, you know, we said we've got a big announcement a year and a half ago to say we were coming to Carew, and people were like, oh, is this the return of Coke? So it was far and away number one.
People are so passionate about that because, you know, we were talking about Skyline. They're having this contest about going to Greece, and they post like, oh, this great thing. And people are like, well, how about you just bring a Skyline to my neighborhood right. In this other state or this other part of the country? And it's like, that's how passionate we are.
Yeah.
Like, we want what we want.
Right. Know what you like and like what you know. Yeah.
We're talking with Todd Napier, Vice President of Frisch's. Todd, did you... When the decision was made to flip to Pepsi originally, did you guys anticipate that big of a backlash?
So that predates my arrival. Okay. And actually, I was out of town working for another restaurant company that made a similar switch, and it was okay. But I had friends that I grew up with here in Cincinnati who said, yeah, but did you hear Frisch's made the switch? So I knew it was a big – it would be akin on the scale of us saying we're taking away the Big Boy. I mean, it's just part of the DNA of who our brand is. Our brand has always been – our very first unit that brought Coca-Cola back was the Mainliner over in Fairfax yep. The end of July. We had guests who drove 20 miles one way on the day that we switched it because they wanted to come and have a Big Boy and a Vanilla Coke. That's awesome. And also
– passion.
Right? You can't really explain it. You just have to say
– As a West Side guy, would you say it's so Cincinnati?
It is so Cincinnati.
So you think if this were to happen at other – in a restaurant, a local, you know, regional type of restaurant in another region, like you said, you were somewhere else. And
I think it's the perfect storm of the right brand, the right history,
yeah.
And two brands coming together. It's not, I don't think it's a...
Let's keep that marriage together.
That's right. And we will.
It does seem like, I mean, you really made the decision. I've heard, I don't know if this is true, that you actually ended the Pepsi contract early. That's how much you wanted to go back.
Yep.
Like, that's a big deal in the restaurant businesses, like a big contract like that.
It is. But again, you know, the guiding light was let's do right by the guest and by the brand. And that's how we got to where we got.
As you talk about the new owners coming in 4 years ago, part of what you guys have been doing recently is you've been refreshing your dining areas and your restaurants. How is that going? What's your favorite thing about
great that you worked
about
that
the refresh. I didn't mean it that way, but you know, it just are we going to start to see other restaurants? Like my home Frisch's is the Hartwell. We go there
yep.
pretty regularly. Will we start to see
you
refreshes
will.
In other?
So by the end of this fiscal year, so for us, a fiscal year starts in June. So we're just getting started. By the end of this fiscal year, so by next summer, we hope to have about 2/3 of our restaurants remodeled. Y'all already mentioned the Carew location that opened a year ago. We opened a small format store last fall down in Dry Ridge. So we're looking at how do we celebrate and renovate and innovate the brand through the physical plant. And we're also doing off-premise. We got into DoorDash and Postmates delivery here in the last few months, and Grubhub's coming right around the corner.
It seems like that's really aimed at young people because I have to say, like, Frisch's is not that far from my house. I'm going to get in a car. I could possibly go through the drive-thru or actually eat in there.
Yep.
You know, but the babysitters, they like those things, and they're getting it delivered. And now my child, anywhere we are, we'll just have Frisch's delivered or just we'll have whatever delivered. And it's like, okay. Yep. Like, how important is this to, like, for your young patrons?
Well, I think for sure, increasingly, the younger patrons aren't interested in, as you just said, going to a bricks and mortar and sitting and dining in. They've got other things going on, and you literally can have everything delivered to you. So we're trying to figure out what's that all mean. Any restaurant operator will tell you, I love being involved in delivery, but I don't know, is that taking away a dollar that I would have had dining in otherwise? Most of the evidence seems to say no, that it's taking away from a grocery visit and that it's just more convenient. We get tons of families. We get a bunch of kids' meals that are ordered through delivery. So we're still appealing to a broader segment, but it's the wild, wild west for sure.
You can deliver the fudge cake. Is it going to melt? What do we got here?
Fudge cake is the number three thing that we deliver. It's the third most popular item of everything on our menu through delivery.
Do people only have fudge cake delivered?
Probably.
what's number one?
Number one's the big boy. Number two's fries, and number three is the hot fudge cake.
Number four is a large Coke.
Yep.
It is.
Okay. It is. Yep. Carb beverage is somewhere right up in there. Yeah.
So you have premium burgers now, right? And I've seen they have these names, right?
Like, we do. Well, what we've learned.
The Mad Burger, right?
So the Bad Boy. Like 6 weeks ago,
we introduced
the Bad Boy, which is on the Big Boy platform, but with a spicy tartar sauce. And in the first week of introduction, it became our number three or number four seller. It's been so popular. It's supposed to end today. We've got a new summer promo that starts tomorrow that'll run all summer. The Bad Boy has been so popular, we're keeping it on. Because guests have just
for
loved
good
it.
Or just through the summer
for good.
All right, see, that's nice. I think we're making
breaking news right there. Right.
So the bad boy
will stay.
Is here with the big boy to stay.
Yep.
Speaking of big boy,
yep.
The big boy mascot lost a little weight.
He did.
What have you gotten any feedback from customers on that? Was there any kind of negative or questioning about it?
Yeah.
I mean, do you hear much about?
So yeah,
I'd
say a lot of folks get it, have noticed it. And have said, hey, he's more svelte, he's more this. And so we mix it up between stripes and checks. And for the longtime brand fans who are big boy fanatics, they notice all of those little details. But generally, folks have been real accepting, and big boy's been a lot more involved in getting out to community events over the last couple, 3 years. So we're excited about that.
All right. So I think that big boy was spotted over the weekend. Is this true?
That is true.
Where
big boy
was spotted in the FCC march.
That's right.
Oh.
Yep. And
the slim down big boy.
The slim down big boy was. He was moving quick. That's why
soccer
he's slimmer.
Playing big boy.
That's right.
I mean, everybody wants to be in the march. I think that's where we're at this point. Even him, right? And like. And I think there's news surrounding that. I'm getting ready to actually write about this.
Yep.
Like, there's a big commitment coming. Can you tell us about that?
Drum roll.
Absolutely. So we were one of the early in supporters of FC Cincinnati when they started. The brand has a heritage. You know, we're longtime supporters of other properties like the Cincinnati Reds and the Nutcracker for the ballet. And so community connection is an important thing for us. We recognize that FC Cincinnati was a new and exciting sports opportunity. Our core guests and those incremental guests, those new guests that we want to get to, were all there. So we joined them in partnership, and when they got their MLS expansion, we had the opportunity to renegotiate and have signed a new 5-year agreement. And we couldn't be more excited. So we're with them here at Nippert, and then we'll be with them as they get to the new stadium.
And, you know, I mean, it seems to me like you're the longest partnership with the Reds,
right?
50 years, I think I saw somewhere.
Longest Reds, longest of arts, so the Nutcracker, the ballet.
So I feel like, I mean, do you look at that as becoming like part of the fabric of like our hometown? We're at these games, right?
Yep.
Like, then you become part of that.
Yeah, and the cool thing is really there when you look at their footprint and their appeal, we're really in 5 markets, right? We're Cincinnati, Dayton, Louisville, Lexington, Columbus. And when you look at those other properties, they have a similar kind of Midwestern footprint and feel, so it's just a great match for our brands to jump in on those opportunities.
When as a marketing expert, you talk about how customers, loyal customers of a really an uber local part of the fabric brand. When we think of those, we think of Frisch's, we think of Skyline. I know we talk a lot about chili on this show, so I'm trying to stay away
Jason
from it.
Jason and his bowls of chili. I'm on Team Bad Boy, just so now we know. Like, that's it now.
every time you make any kind of a change, whether that's you just add sweet potato fries to the menu, something small like that, to changing the appearance of your mascot, to even big, obviously we know what happened with Coke and Pepsi. Do you brace for crazy feedback?
Yes.
So that's positive and negative. I mean,
there's always, I've never worked with or for a brand that has gotten the volume of feedback that we get on everything. So last Saturday was National Onion Ring Day, and we did a bunch of promotions on our social channels, and which is your preferred, regular or crispy? And I'm thinking, oh, I think we'll get some engagement. You would have thought it was a federal election. People weighed in, and my favorite
it
thing
may
is
have
this.
Been more popular than
it may have been, right? Right.
Yeah, it's, so it's it truly, is that. It just, I mean, do you really think that is a Cincinnati thing, or is that
I don't think
everyone?
It's isolated to Cincinnati. I don't think it's as widespread. I think we have a disproportionate number of those brands. So some of the brands you were ticking off, there's just so much love for here's what I have, here's what I've known, multi-generational stories. I think that's a little unique. But I think lots of places you go, there are maybe one or two brands that folks in the community say, oh, this is our kind of hometown thing. We've just got a lot more of them. Yeah.
So you grew by one store downtown, we know.
Yep.
Are there more growth plans?
There are. We actually are going to lean into what do we do to expand our franchisee community. How do we go out and build more units? I mentioned that we're going to be launching Grubhub here shortly. We're actively investigating getting into the food truck business, all designed to say, we want you to come see us, but if you don't want to come see us, we want to come see you.
Where do you anticipate like a food truck will go? Like what?
I'd say any of the community type events, so outlying community activation events, could be high school sporting events, could be county fairs and festivals. We're in off-premise today, so we have two concession stands at the Reds ballpark. We have two concession stands actually with FC Cincinnati. We're at University of Cincinnati in the Fifth Third Center. So again, all ways that when we have a chance to say, how do I come to you so that you don't have to come to me, we're down to try and figure that out.
Which is amazing because it used to be like restaurants, you wanted to go and it was special, even if it was just Frisch's and you're just going for a dinner with everybody.
That's right.
And I mean, we definitely use it as a time. Like we don't necessarily eat dinner together. Like right. It's busy and sports and all these things. But if we can even make it to Frisch's, then at least we're all sitting down in the same booth.
Yep. So for us, it's
and
two things.
And maybe talking.
Right. For us, it's two things. It's how do we keep having a good guest experience for the folks that want to come and see us, but how do we make it the ultimate inconvenience for those who don't want to or can't but still want to have the food? It's a fine line.
How many you just ticked off where you are off-site, or is that what you call it, off-site?
Off-site, yep.
How many stores total does Frisch's have?
123, and the majority of those are company-owned. We're about 100 company-owned, and then the rest are through some franchise partners in the region.
You talk about some expansion plans. I know, obviously, you want to probably keep that tight lip for the most part. Could we see you expand in another state?
You sure could. We actually have the license. So we're part of a family tree of Big Boy years ago. And then we were a franchisee and ultimately got the exclusive rights into perpetuity. So we operate most of Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, and most of Tennessee. So we don't currently have a little bit of a presence in Indiana, over in southern Indiana. We're not currently active in Tennessee. I would say place your bets that would be a place that we would look to expand.
So, I mean, how do you, with having the franchisees, because Grader's told us a couple weeks ago, they pulled back from that. Yep. It's hard, right? And like, I don't know, did you ever see the Michael Keaton movie, The Founder? Like very like franchise, like, and you know, they found like quality control is hard. Like how do you, I don't know. Every time we've gone to a Frisch's, I do feel like I have the same great experience.
Awesome.
Like how do you keep control of that?
So it is that really is the, that's kind of the fine line you have to walk. The advantage of a franchise partner is they sometimes know their local communities better than I would. And so they're able to say, hey, I can get in there and be a successful operator. And they have some skin in the game with that versus trying to grow the branches of the company to those areas. But then to your point, are they following all the standards? Now, we're really blessed. Our franchisees are in lockstep with what it is that we do as a company. So that's so far has worked to our advantage, but it can be challenging. Yeah.
Is there anything that maybe we didn't ask you about that you wanted to chat about today? Sorry, I know it's a very open-ended thing.
But I think it's good. So one of the things that we have learned from having the Bad Boy and having a last winter for the second year we had last fall, we had a specialty version of a hot fudge cake that was pumpkin spice cake with ice cream, and it blew the doors off. So one of the things that we've learned is you can take things that are familiar, like the Big Boy or like the hot fudge cake, and you can play around with it and reimagine it, but still using that same general approach. And our guests are like, I'm in on the joke. I get what you're going for. So we are actively looking at what are the ways that we continue to develop I'm going to call it a big boy platform, where maybe there are, you know, a bunch of different iterations of ways that we can gussy up the big boy, and same thing with the hot fudge cake. So that's in the coming months. I think you'll see us play around more in those two areas.
What was it like when you tried the pumpkin fudge cake? I mean, pumpkin is like everything. Like, I think that's probably going to start pretty soon here. It's like August 1. It's like, it's fall, pumpkin.
It feels like it's like year round, right? Yeah. Yeah. So for us, pumpkin is basically September through Thanksgiving in round numbers, right? Last year we brought back our pumpkin pie, which we've been known for. We brought back this pumpkin not fudge cake, built on that fudge cake platform, and we introduced a pumpkin cheesecake. So you'd think with introducing a new item, you know, sales of the other stuff, sales across the board were crazy up for all three, because it is, as you said, and I think I blame Starbucks. They're the ones that start with the pumpkin spice, and once that ball gets rolling, you know, all bets are off. So it's been a big thing for us.
I think you can add pumpkin to everything.
I think
I'm
you're
pretty
right.
Sure.
We're going to give it a try.
Now that summer has officially started, yep. Any fun summer additions coming on the menu this summer?
So we do. We actually have a summer promotion that starts tomorrow and will run all the way through about Labor Day. And that is, it's called Big Boy's Backyard Barbecue. So we have a barbecue sandwich. We're introducing a special limited time zesty onion ring. We're bringing in some pork riblets that'll be available on our soup and salad bar, and strawberry lemonade. And
nice.
So it's all summer theme. And key lime pie babies are back, which were a huge hit last year. So
I love it, Todd. Thanks.
Yep.
This has been great. Really appreciate you coming in and taking some time to chat about all the exciting things going on at Frisch's. I love how forward thinking you guys are right now, and constantly thinking about changing things up, but yet also keeping that brand strong and keeping that hometown feel about the restaurant.
That's the magic.
So thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks so much to Todd Napier from Frisch's and Jackie Rowe from Game Day Communications for rallying Todd to come in and chat with us. We love our food here on the TSC. We love our politics. We mix it all up. We mix it all together. Sports, little current events, fun stuff. I haven't had a curmudgeon moment really recently, and I think we'll leave it at that. We're trying to keep it positive around here.
I'm not asking for curmudgeon moments, just so we can be clear about that.
I guess I did have one when I was complaining about the weather, but I don't think I was alone in that. The sun is shining, folks. The sun is shining on this day, Tuesday, as we record. Also, thanks to Jesse Ballmer. Just great job. One of the best in the biz at covering the Statehouse news. And, you know, you can ask Jesse. She knows a lot about a lot, and there's a lot to keep track of in state government. And her and Jackie Borchardt, our Inquirer team in Columbus, do a great job. Let's segue into having a little fun. This is the fun segment of the show. And Sherry, I heard you took a wild ride this weekend. And that brings us to our
So Cincinnati
moment of the week.
I don't know how So Cincinnati it is.
It doesn't
but
matter. It happened in Cincinnati,
in
and
Cincinnati.
It was crazy.
It was in a golf cart. I came down for the Pride Parade with my friends, and basically all of downtown was shut down at that point. So you kind of like come in on the peripheral of downtown, right? And it's like, that has just stopped. And here comes one of the golf carts that ferry people around downtown. I've seen them. I thought I should figure out how to call those and take those because, you know, what if I'm in my heels? I need to be walking.
Absolutely.
Here comes a golf cart. I yell across the street. I'm like, hey, can we get a ride? Pull us up on the sidewalk. Comes and gets us. And, you know, I was like, this is so easy and it's so great to get around town. We go north on Elm Street. Street's blocked off. Make a left on 6th Street. Streets are blocked off.
Oh, no.
We took the golf cart down the ramp.
Like, so we were getting off, on the highway. We went off-roading, huh?
Like we were getting on the highway. But, you know, you can go up Ezra Charles.
Oh.
So we took the golf cart. Cars are, like, whizzing by us.
Oh, my goodness.
Bumping along.
Was it just you and your... How many people were with you?
My friend from home, Tom, and my friend Julian were all in the golf cart.
Julie and Tom, yep.
Holding on. I trusted the guy. He couldn't have been nicer. But, you know, we're rolling down the hill.
You're on the on-ramp to 75.
The golf carts, they can go up to 35 miles an hour. And we basically just made a gigantic circle all the way around downtown to get around everything, to get down to Sawyer Point, where everything was happening. It was a huge party down there, like, you know, thousands of people.
The party after the parade.
Exactly. And so I have found a new mode of transportation. I'm on the golf carts are everything you need.
And the golf carts, those guys and ladies who drive those, they work off strictly off of tips, right? Like there's no like metered charge for the golf cart ride itself.
Exactly. There was a large tip involved in
Absolutely.
This. We got there safe and we spent a long time together.
Be sure to tip your golf cart drivers. I have taken them. I've taken it one time and it's a great, great way to get around downtown.
This was Guest, and there's Ogo, too. We have two of them.
Yep.
And, you know, you're starting to see more and more of them, and they're really their advertising, you know, sponsored. Like the one we were in, it was Budweiser and Red's 150th anniversary, and it's like, it's where the ads are. I mean, to be fair, I still love my Red bikes. It's not, I don't want to make any, you know, I'm a Red bike person, but this was a nice alternative.
My cynical mind brings me to this, and I'm driving downtown today for our podcast and I'm psyching myself up. I'm like, I'm not going to mention the streetcar today. But then we saw you took the golf cart ride and it's like one more mode of transportation that gets people around town so much better than the streetcar.
The streetcar.
How'd that go? How'd that go, Phil? Thank
you. The streetcar was running, and that's been a very big deal to streetcar supporters that it can run during this because, you know, they shut it down during some of the events. It was running towards this, but, I mean, to be fair, I probably wasn't yelling out to the streetcar, hey, can you give me a ride? And then it's going to bump along and come up on the sidewalk and come and grab me. Like, there's a convenience to that.
Or take you on to 75.
Or that, right. So, but I think a lot of people did find it very useful because you could go from over the Rhine, you know, close to Sawyer Point where things were happening.
Along those same lines, well, this is part of your fun-filled weekend. I noticed on social media, you took the golf cart ride, but weren't you wearing an interesting thing on your head as well during this all of this fun stuff?
So Daisy Jane Flower Truck, it's a new thing that she's it's actually a former reporter from Channel 12 started this.
Really?
And she's like, it's the cutest little thing. It's made for Instagram. And she's bringing flowers to you.
So it's like a food truck, but with flowers.
Exactly. And honestly, it's almost, you could just tell, this is like the new way of doing things. The golf cart's coming to you. She's bringing flowers to you. Frisch's is delivering. Like, this is like,
Graders
this is our new
food trucks.
Economy. It really does seem like. And so she goes to, like, you know, all of these markets, and she put on Instagram that she was selling like these colorful flower crowns. And it was a very fun thing for the day or weekend, or it's taken everything I can to pry it off of my head and not wear it to work. But
it's so you.
Yeah.
I say that in a positive way. I didn't say that negatively.
No,
I think it looked great.
So you'll have like all of my social media pictures, and I'm going to put, I took a picture with my golf cart driver, Mike. He's my bud now. So
Mike.
I'll put that on Twitter.
Yes, I saw that picture. Mike, you and Mike are buds. And I love the, what do you call it? The flower, is it called
flower crown?
Flower
yeah.
crown. Yeah. They just look fun. I don't know. They scream out happy.
I was happy all weekend.
Yeah.
It was a very happy weekend here. It was colorful. It was all the, you know, like a rainbow.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's completely.
You can't be a curmudgeon in the flower crown. Should I get you one?
Yeah. No, don't give me a flower crown.
All right.
Don't waste your money. Where can we find, what's Daisy Jane?
Yes.
Where can we,
She's on Instagrams where I kind of see her, Daisy Jane's Flower Truck, and she posts where she's going to be at. She goes to the Coffee Emporium, but she's all over Northern Kentucky. She's been up in, I know, Glendale, and so she takes it all over.
But is it even somewhere like, I want to grab my wife flowers on the way home or something? You can do that too, or is it more of especially things like the flower crowns, those types of things?
Oh, no. It's just she's going to make you a bouquet. They're beautiful.
Okay.
And, like, and she goes to Fountain Square, which that's like a rich tradition of Fountain Square, right? Selling flowers there. And so, you know, she brings that there.
Yeah. Just one more fun new thing here in Cincinnati. And
You know, you have to get Bethany flowers now that you said this. It's not like she's not listening to us.
I know. I stepped in it on that one.
All right. It's the perfect summer thing, though.
We'll be getting you some flowers, dear. Let's, I do want to shift gears before we close out here. And on a sad note, I want to wish condolences to the family and friends of and the business community of John Williams, former president of the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. Such an icon in our community. I always heard, I actually never met him in my 7 years here, but I always heard so many. I know people sort of tend to say this after folks pass away, but I heard, I've heard so many positive things about him and about how his passion for Cincinnati and what he did. He was such a key leader on pushing for the Banks Project back in the 90s. Someone who brought people together. And we think about Cincinnati, how sometimes we look at the negative and how people can't get along in government and business and everybody clashes. But John Williams was a man who helped to try to overcome all those differences and get people to the table. He also helped keep Oktoberfest and Taste of Cincinnati and just did so many wonderful things. And so I just want to wish the chamber condolences, the Williams family condolences, just not about me, but just to make, I am not related to them. So, yeah, and just the entire business community, I know just lost a real champion.
You know, his legacy is more than just those kind of projects and things that he did in his own work. I had the chance to interview him last year when I wrote a profile about Jeff Birding, and he was a mentor to people. I mean, mm-hmm. Jeff kind of sent me his way and said that he was a mentor to him, but the things he had to say about Jeff, these back and forths, and he was that for a lot of our current leaders. He took the time for people to help them grow and be better people and so that they can be our leaders now. And so it's like a name you don't hear, but it changed our city so many ways and it still is by just being that person. And these mentors are important, I think, to who's guiding our young leaders.
Yeah. I mean, what a legacy of investing in relationships and investing in people. And to me, that's the best legacy is that you made an impact on people's lives and trying to help them to be better leaders and better moms and dads and business folks. And I think that certainly beats anything, any kind of a legacy of trying to get a street named after you or, you know, something ceremonial like that. So again, you know, really not just condolences, but thank you to John Williams and what he did for Cincinnati. Anyway, I think that's it was fun filled and cram packed episode today. And thanks for, I got to get my plug in. Folks, keep going, Cincinnati.com. Get that subscription. No one's covering politics, business, government, sports the way we are. We have beat writers on the Reds, the Bengals, FC Cincinnati, UC Bearcats, Xavier Musketeers. We have a beat writer at City Hall, and that's Sherry. We have
Scott Wortman,
who also is covering politics around the region. Myself, a columnist. No one else is doing this, so it's important to our, democracy. It's important to keeping our public officials accountable, and that's not just elected officials, but that's influencers. Covering influencers, the people who are making decisions, whether they're elected or not, is very important to having a thriving, healthy community. So if you don't already have it, and I know a lot of you do, please consider a subscription to Cincinnati.com.
There's bound to be a 4th of July
sale. Bound to be a 4th of July sale.
Mattresses and Enquirer subscriptions.
We'll be back next week. I got a fun guest next week. Looking forward to having that person on. We don't want to give it away, so we want you coming back next week, and we'll look forward to that. Thanks for joining us.